the power of music, much discussed by philosophers, musicians, and world leaders alike. Mandela believed music has the power to liberate. For Maria von Trapp, it's like a magic key to which the most tightly closed heart opens. We know it here in Ireland, and in Rwanda, music has made that same journey, from politics to hate, to love, and out the other side.
With music, you can do good or evil. It is an instrument that can help people or that can lose people. It depends on what kind of message you have.
Music can bond communities, it can be the glue that holds people together with a kind of a collective identity.
Central African countries, Burundi and Rwanda, have been killed in a plane crash.
The Red Cross said this evening that hundreds of people have been killed and thousands wounded in tribal warfare in the Central African.
11 Belgian peacekeeping troops have been killed in the violence racking the Central African state of Rwanda.
According to reports this lunchtime, at least 19 Rwandan priests and nuns have been murdered in the outbreak of ethnic violence and upheaval after the killing of the Prime Minister and the apparent...
As more reports emerge from Rwanda on the huge scale of the killings and the humanitarian crisis there, the United Nations Secretary General, Dr. Boutros-Ghali.
Belgian and French troops have been put on alert for a possible evacuation of foreigners from the Central African state of Rwanda. Dozens of...
The Secretary General is believed to consider the crisis to be of unprecedented proportions.
Downtown Kigali, 2014. It definitely feels like the cleanest and best organised of all the African cities I visited. Hardly surprising, Rwanda's been called the Switzerland of Africa. Also known as the Land of a Thousand Hills, Rwandans believe it's this landscape that's made them a little unique. And this uniqueness is reflected in their music. And that's what I'm here to discover. World music hit the big time in 1986 with the release of Paul Simon's Graceland. Until then, ethnic music was hard to get your hands on. So, while Mali, Nigeria, Senegal, and other African countries were getting noticed, for Rwanda, music was the last thing on the agenda, as they teetered on the brink of civil war. It doesn't mean that music wasn't the backbone of this little country the same size as Wales, as Amable Insabayesu explained.
Normally in our culture, music was used to communicate, to educate, just to transmit messages. because even from one hill to another one, a chief of village could stand and sing something or communicate something with other people. So music was a great instrument.
And according to one of Rwanda's leading artists, J.P. Samputu, each part of the country has its own style.
You will go to south, it's different. You go to west, different. There is a place called Kuhombo. I composed a song called Rehema. It's a style from there. I composed in 1986. I was there. Then I learned that dance. The rhythm is like a... People can say 68 or 12-8, but this is a rhythm in Kangogo, in Kuhombo. It's totally different.
Because of the diversity in the music, it makes it very difficult to play, according to producer Dickon Marshall of Rafiki Records.
It really is unique and has a sound which is totally individual. You know, I've come across a lot of instrumentalists or professional musicians that really find it difficult to, even myself included, you know, if I try and play some or replicate some Rwandan riffs, it's pretty tough, but they make it sound really easy. You know, the importance of music in Rwandan society is just huge, right the way through from village life to military life to anything.
Meet singing legend Cécile Kayerabwa. Even though she's lived a lot of her life in Belgium, she's back in her homeland to celebrate 30 years in the charts. It's a sunny Saturday afternoon, and given the stares we're getting, I'm in no doubt of Cécile's celebrity status.
She's sorry that you cannot communicate.
Cécile's son Eric took on the translation duties, relaying to us why it was important for his mom to sing in her native language, Kinyarwanda.
Parce qu'à l'école, quand même, on parlait français.
So at that time they were learning a lot of songs at school. So as there was a lot of learning happening in French, she could already feel like Kinyarwanda was put a little bit on the back burner. It was like, you know, a low priority. So that's when they really decided to take those songs and to practice them, to rehearse them together, and sometimes even rearrange them, give them a bit more style, give them a bit more punch. So it's more enticing when it's performed, and there's more rhythm for the dance. So they were already making those arrangements, protecting the language, rearranging the song, traditional songs, amongst themselves.
And it turns out that Eric is a bit of a fan of how we do things over here.
The way the traditional Irish expression of music, dance, has been preserved, and it's funky and sexy, and it's well packaged. There's two countries that inspires me in terms of like what our country is: Mali and Ireland. La musique traditionnelle, 15, 20 dancers, like, ta, 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 slick in black, and you know, it's like wow, it's funky, it's very funky. You know, it's the Western way of like, you know, making, you know, it's preserved, is, you know, the integrity is still there in the form of music, but it's bankable. Let's put it that bankable, just like, yeah, let's tour.
And sure, wherever you go, you're guaranteed to find an Irishman. World music enthusiast Neil Goodwin.
The traditions were always shared between Tutsi and Hutu. You know, there was never a divide musically. I mean, they were all bound by their rich ancient traditions. And there was kind of a break around the last war, and following the last war, there wasn't much going on. And a lot of the traditions were kind of, not lost, but were kind of fell by the wayside.
This speech by Hutu extremist Leon Mugesera in 1992 is widely regarded as the turning point that changed the course of Rwandan history. It gave the necessary momentum to the anti-Tutsi hysteria that led to the genocide. Rwanda was a Belgian colony, made up of 85% Hutu, 14% Tutsi, and 1% Pygmy Twa. Throughout colonial rule, Tutsis were favoured for their lighter skin and taller physique. As independence was getting closer, the Belgians switched allegiance and began to empower the Hutu majority, leaving the potential for ethnic warfare in its wake. The killings began in 1959, continued sporadically throughout the 60s, into the 80s, and right up to the crucial moment in 1994, when President Habyarimana's plane was shot down.
The violence started on Wednesday after an aeroplane carrying the president.
Genocide had begun.
This is RTLM, Hutu Power Radio. When people ask me, good listeners, why do I hate all the Tutsi? I say, read our history. The Tutsi were collaborators for the Belgian colonists. They stole our Hutu land. They whipped us. Now they have come back, these Tutsi rebels. They are cockroaches. They are murderers. Rwanda is our Hutu land. We are the majority. They are a minority of traitors and invaders. We will squash their infestation. We will wipe out the RPF rebels. This is RTLM, Hutu Power Radio. Stay alert. Watch your neighbors.
Radio had always played a huge part in the daily routine of Rwandans. But in 1993, with the establishment of RTLM, it became a very powerful weapon. The airwaves were saturated with hate speech against the Tutsis, proclamations of war, and music suffused with the most subtle of messages. In this war, you had to pick a side. Singers and musicians took their place among the perpetrators, and music and politics collided. This is Simon Bikindi, once known as the Michael Jackson of Rwanda. He was a superstar, but a superstar paid by the government behind the genocide. I hate these Hutu, these arrogant Hutu who have disowned their identity. I hate these Hutu who march blindly like imbeciles. This is just one of many songs written to push moderate Hutus across the line into extremism and murder.
Whenever you want people to do irrational stuff, you need to at least to get them by the emotions, by the senses. I mean, it was like when this little short guy with his brown hair was telling the whole world that the Ubermensch, that the best, was tall and blonde and blue eyes and all that. He was trying to create a kind of emotion, you know, and everyone would think this is the ideal stuff, but everything is emotion. There is nothing rational about it. There's nothing tangible. One of his songs were like, oh my God, so stupid that the guy is at the wrong side of the counter. Because some of his songs were like, whoa.
Albert Radatsenburger from Contact FM. JP Samputu.
He used his gift in the way it can mobilize people to kill others. I know one man just in the genocide told me that it was difficult for him to go and kill people, but when he heard the Bikin song, he felt that now I can act. And he joined others to kill people because of Bikin songs, which that explained how music is so powerful that it can even push somebody to do what is not supposed to do.
The godfather of Rwandan music, Makanyaga, met Bikindi regularly.
I knew Bikindi very well. He worked in a government department in charge of youth and entertainment. I did not have any friendship with him. We knew each other at a professional level only. Many musicians who sang about the politics had friends and supporters among the politicians in Rwanda. I was never interested in singing political songs, but other musicians have politician friends who would always support their musical activities. When you get economical support from somebody, you have to sing what they want you to sing.
Nobody I met could deny Bikindi was a brilliant musician.
The guy is talented. talented, his uniqueness, the way he sings in 5/8 with simplicity, it was amazing. I had many trouble because what he did in the genocide, people say, why you say that? You know what he did in genocide? And I said, they didn't ask me about what he did in genocide. They asked me about his music. And I said the truth. I know he killed many people, but I have to, it doesn't say that. He's not an amazing artist and singer. He was, and he is, one of the best singers that I recognize his uniqueness, but he didn't use his gift to a good cause.
Bikindi songs and many others like them could be heard everywhere.
They were using on the roadblocks or moving from one street to another one just to find people. And now from one mountain to mountain, they were marching in the streets using those kind of aggressive songs and the music, beating drums. They were singing wherever they were. So for their own purpose, but they had also the recorded music, already recorded music they were playing on the radios. It was terrifying. The words they were singing, that kind of music, you could listen that you don't have hair on your head. Hearing those people just moving around your house, you see all moving around, you see. It was terrifying.
In 2001, Simon Bikindi was arrested in the Netherlands, and in 2008 he went on trial. It was a landmark case because it threw up the question as to whether or not a song can constitute an international crime. The trial chamber drew factual conclusions about Bikindi's music, finding that his songs, quote, were used to incite people to attack and kill Tutsi and had an amplifying effect on the genocide, end quote. He's currently serving a 15-year sentence for acts of genocide. I'm standing on Nyanza Hill on the outskirts of Kigali. I can see the entire city spread out below me. The wind is blowing, the birds are singing. It's really peaceful here. I'm with Chantel Karasira, who tells me that on the 11th of April 1994, it was a very different scene.
We decided to move from our house on the 7th because the killers started to kill our neighbors. Then we say, if we stay here, we are going to die. They are going to just to come in the house and kill us. So we go to look for the refuge in the school.
How many were you?
When we moved from our home, just we were four. I, my auntie, my cousin, and our uncle. But in the way we met other people, that's the feeling that there is something. There is a death around. So we arrived here at 7. On 11, the Belgium troops decided, maybe not them, but the decision came that they have to leave, not taking care of the people who are in their hands, no, just to leave. The whole school was surrounded by killers. Sometimes I think that they knew that one day those Belgium troops will leave the place. When the Belgium left, the killers entered in the school, and then they started to kill people. So for some who had energy to live, to learn, we have to learn so quickly. We have to learn. If we are going to be killed, let that in learning. Don't stay. And the soldiers, they started shooting. I felt waiting, and convinced that we are going to die. I just waiting. I and my auntie and my cousin Arret, we were just close. We could just see, talk, and ask, how are you?
And what was the scene? What do you remember when you stood up?
When we were at that ground, I felt that no shooting, no fire of grenade. I'm not even touched by machete or other. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to stay like this. I felt that to be there, to die there at the time, it was good more than to stay.
So you wanted to die?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We asked our auntie, how are you? She told us, no, my heart is broken. They cut me with the machete. Maybe in some hours I will go because I'm not good. And then we are going to tell them that we are alive so that they can come and finish us. They come and cut my head. They do also the same to Harriet. But we kept strong. I remember one some of our friends, Tutsi, they said, please, begging. They used to beg to the killers, please, can you shoot me? Please shoot me, I'm going to pay you. And the killers say, okay, we need that money, give me money. After having money, they don't shoot, they say, no, you are going to die slowly, slowly.
What happened then? Where did you run to? Where did you hide?
Our auntie just told us to leave. She told us, you know, my daughters, if you stay, you are going to struggle more than this. So I beg you, don't take care of me. Forget, I'm going to die in a few hours. Leave this place. And then we obeyed her. We said, okay, let's go. We said goodbye. It's hard, you know. It was not even her only, but to see our neighbors. They wished us some good luck and said, okay. For us, it's the end. We don't have a chance to survive. So for you, wish you good luck. Please go and look for where you can hide yourself. Maybe you will survive.
Chantel did survive that night. 3,000 others were not so lucky.
Abbas, Alfred, Ali Juma, Banyange Pascal, Banyange Marie, Basabe Imakili, Habineza Jacques, Hagenimana Narcisse, Hakolimana Dismas, Patricie, and Happy. Mokore Martian, Mokunde Marcel, Mnya Kayanza Atanas. May their soul rest in peace. Yeah.
The international community turned its back on Rwanda. But some journalists fought tirelessly to try to keep the story in the headlines. One of those was our very own Fergal Keane, who arrived towards the end of the genocide to report for the BBC. In Ghosts of Rwanda, he relived the horror of arriving at Narabuya Church.
We got out of the car. In front of the church, there were some bodies on the ground. You find yourself walking along and you're stepping around and stepping over bodies. And then we walked down this path through the church compound, and it was heavily overgrown. And we went down further until we came to this kind of open courtyard area where the bodies were stacked in against the walls. And it started to get dark, and then we went into the church, and there was no light in the church itself. You're walking around the dark, and you suddenly the light points here, and you see a kid's body. Then down in another corner, there's a man's body lying there. As we're coming out, we hear noises from one of the rooms. And I got very, very scared. And one of the drivers with us, a Ugandan, said, "Don't worry, it's only rats. Rats." And we left, and I just remember looking up at the church itself, and there's this white statue of Christ standing with his arms open. And then as you look down from him, there's the remains of a human body underneath. And I was, you know, I was raised as a Catholic. And I kind of drifted away big time from religion. But I really, I prayed so hard. I said, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Give us thy kingdom come." I needed to believe in something.
By now, almost 1 million Tutsi and moderate Hutu had been massacred. What was remarkable was that this was neighbour against neighbour, friend against friend, husband against wife. After 100 days of unspeakable torture, the Rwandan Patriotic Front were taking back the country, finally putting an end to genocide. This is Nsinzi by Maria Yohani. It means victory. And it became an anthem for 700,000 Tutsi refugees exiled for decades who were now finally able to return to their homeland. Among those to return, musician Mighty Popo, one of the most influential artists in Rwanda today.
Born and raised in Burundi by Rwandan parents. My parents fled Rwanda in two times, 59 and then 61. So I was born in Burundi, raised in Burundi, primary school and high school in Burundi, and first year of university. Then I moved to Canada.
So you emigrated to Canada without ever setting foot in your own country?
My country, I only heard from stories and tales and just beautiful singing and dancing and just like fairy tales, pretty much, you know. I wanted to keep it that way because what I heard coming from Rwanda was so negative. But that romantic country in fairy tales and in Migani, I really loved. The name of the hills, and I just wanted to keep that as that beautiful fairy tale. My first country of citizenship was Canada. Unbelievable. I'm born 23.
Got your first citizenship.
Exactly. At 23, I got my first citizenship, Canadian. Because before that, I had a UNHCR card. I was a refugee. You know, born in Africa, African, and I'm called a refugee. That's absurd. It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be that way.
So when did you first set foot in your homeland?
Back in 1998, I was invited to take part of the FESPAD festival here in Rwanda. And physically, I got to see my grandmother for the first time in 1998.
What was it like getting off the plane?
I couldn't tell you the emotions, you know. You cannot explain it. It's this thing that just... I was quiet. I couldn't talk. We landed here, first of all, from the airplane to see the landscape, you know, just all these green areas. All those fairy tales start coming to reality. This is no fairy tale anymore. This is my country, you know. So I was really in a trance. You know, I mean, I don't want to sound too sweet and all that stuff, but I knew my place was here.
Popo, your relative, Maria Johanna, she wrote a very powerful song.
Well, she wrote so many songs, and she lost 4 of her sons during the struggle. So she has no children.
She lost 4 of her sons?
Yeah, she did. And she wrote so many powerful songs. Powerful, I mean, she's so strong. I mean, before the genocide ended, she wrote this song in teens that really motivated all of us to really participate, you know, to make sure that this country changed for the better of all Rwandans. And imagine all of us singing that song after the victory, after the RPF stopped the genocide. You know, that was powerful then, it still is powerful today. And with no apology to people who think it wasn't a victory, because it was a great victory for all Rwandans, without a doubt.
Kakwandi, hello.
Hello.
It's great to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Welcome to Rwanda and to Solace Ministries.
Thank you. What a great, what a great place.
Yeah.
It's high up on the hill, looking down over Kigali.
Oh, I think maybe Ireland must be even better.
Yeah, we're lucky. We live in a beautiful country. So I think I'm lucky. I've just arrived on Sunday when the Solace Choir get together. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about them. You're the founder of the Solace Choir, right?
Yeah, exact. You know, it's not only the choir that comes. The Solace Ministries is just a Christian-based organization that is started after the genocide. And the aim was to comfort widows and often survivors of the genocide. And the choir was started as one of the activity aiming at healing of trauma. As I told you, many of the people here have lost all their entire families. What they need are people, not material things. In the beginning, even you can give them food or some household equipment, and what they will throw it away, because what they need is people, because it was the biggest loss. What you have to understand, to make a genocide succeed, you have to dehumanize people. In our case, the people who were killed were called cockroaches or snakes. But when you come and sit down with a person, it's part helping of the process of healing. Why? Because now, if we are sitting together, you are a human being. I also am a human being. When I talk to you and you listen to me, I'm no longer a cockroach. I'm no longer a snake. I'm a human being. Then you listen to me, then now I'm retrieving my identity as a human being. And then listening to the music, you are listening to the music of people, not of animals or snakes.
Yose yari yaturetse
chura burindi dutakani agirutkumva niwe watwibutse Aturagira mu rwuri rutoshye bituma subizwa intege.
I'm here at a very famous site in Kigali, the San Remi Church, which is right across the road from the Hotel des Miquelines, known from the film Hotel Rwanda. I'm meeting up with music therapist Chris Nicholson from Musicians Without Borders.
Yeah, so this, you got the church up the top, and then I guess all of these buildings here are the church buildings.
Yeah.
And then this is the church school across here, all the way around down here as well. This is all the school buildings here. So look, what's happening today before we get down there?
Mm-hmm.
So every week we have a support group that meets here. So there's about 200 like teenagers, adolescents that meet. So they have this process where the older children become the youth leaders, the peer parents. So they have a peer family. So those 25 looked after a certain number of children each and do education programs, do counseling, support programs. The organization was founded in 1999. Mm-hmm. So initially it was in Eastern Europe, and went in with those really divided communities and using music as a way both to deal with the people on each side individually, but also as an activity, a resource that actually brings people together.
I get the whole philosophy behind music therapy, but in a practical sense, out here somewhere like this in Rwanda, how does it work?
I think trauma here is complex and it's generational. I don't approach working with trauma as something on its own, as an individual thing that I'm going to address. So in a practical sense, to answer the question in a practical sense, that means making music with people. So it means viewing someone's music as an expression of what they're going through.
In Ireland, music is very important to us. And having spent a couple of days here in Rwanda, I mean, it's cliche to say music is so important in Africa, but here you get it, you feel it. And people are musical, so you can understand why it would work like that.
Yeah, I think a difference that I see, and actually that I've seen in Ireland too, is that music is less about some people being musicians and some people not being musicians. It's much more this community activity. Mm. And music essentially is something which anyone can do. It's not like in England, we have more of a division there, I think, that some people would say, I don't dance, I don't sing, I don't play. And I don't see that in Rwanda. I think music is much more of a community resource. And therefore, people are exposed to it much earlier, and it's kind of all around people, and people are never told, you're not a musician, you're not talented, therefore you don't play, you listen. It's incredibly powerful, which is why it can be used incredibly well for positive ends. But of course, it can also be used negatively. And in any conflict, there's always been music. Any army in the world has musicians. And it's about motivating people. It's about spreading an ideology. It's about making people feel they're part of the same thing, which can be inclusive or divisive, whichever way that's used.
I've come to Oakdale Music School to meet the youth leaders from Musicians Without Borders. Leader Mary Paul told me how music helps the children they work with.
I think the children, music help them to be relaxed and to be happy and to be comfortable at the school. And I think it builds the relationship with their families and the society. I think it does.
The director of Oakdale, Amable Insibayesu.
It's like if you have a medicine,
You can use it to heal, or you can use it to kill yourself or to kill people. But music in medicine, in its essence, it's good. But you can use it properly or misuse it. It's the same as music.
Sophie Nzayazenga is a teacher here at the school. She plays the inanga, a traditional Rwandan instrument that looks a little like a surfboard with strings. Sophie, like everyone else, was affected by the events in 1994.
Genocide has had a very bad impact on Rwandan music. Just after the end of genocide, I did not know if we could ever do music again. I lost my joy because some of my brothers and sisters passed away during the genocide. After the genocide, my love for playing went away, but little by little I started playing again, and I am still playing now.
Irishman Neil Goodwin is currently working on a music project in Rwanda to highlight the benefits of solar energy and the dangers of kerosene gas, proving once again how effective music and radio are in this country.
If a message is sung and delivered in a catchy kind of, in a powerful way, people will be inclined to believe that message, to take it as a given, as word. But I mean, one of the artists I was working out there, Monsieur Makanyaga, when he whispers jump, you know, people panic, how high? So having someone like him, you know, saying, telling you that, look, you should get rid of this kerosene gas. It's making your children ill and it's creating an unhealthy environment in the household. And having him tell people over via the radio to do this is just, you know, incredibly effective. Tell me, Boo Radio. Bring me some good news.
Listen, got me singing this worry blues. Kumenyu kubwiza ukuri, tangu uvuga ibinyoma, n'ikibazo cy'ingutu. Well, a new generation of musicians are hoping to make their mark. I went along to a club to meet with Clemon, who owns Kenya Music, and two of his stars, Noles and Christopher, who were on a high after an impressive gig the night before.
We had more than 20,000 people in the stadium, I think. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it was raining hard.
Yeah, I saw it. It was so much rain and everyone was just dancing like they didn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, you know,
fell.
Yeah, yeah. It was hard because, you know, it was raining, and you know, because people were there, so I had to, you know, to entertain them to the point they feel like it is not raining. So, you know, but fine enough for it. But
so, Nolas, you're 23 years of age. So nice to meet you guys who are helping the country move to a different place.
Even ourselves, we were shocked. You know, we can't really like get how far we came from and where we are right now. Because, for example, if you're talking to Nolas here, like she went through a lot in that period and ourselves. So now sitting here and talking about music and from that time, it's even ourselves, we don't believe in that. You know, we lost many of friends, parents, you know, brothers, sisters. So it's really like we are amazed even ourselves, you know, when we see where we came from and where we are right now. For me, I was 6 years old, but I have the images like it was yesterday, you know, when you talk about it.
It's going to take time.
You can move on, but you can forget. It's a different thing, you know. We moved on. We are now doing music, but it doesn't mean that we forgot, you know. It's something which happened and you saw it and you hear it. It's not like it's a movie. Even a movie you remember, but now if it's happening in front of you, like you can never, like, never forget. Mm.
Do you feel, Clement, lucky that you survived it?
Everyone who's living, like, after the genocide is lucky.
Would you say that you love your country?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so much. I love Rwanda. I love my country, yeah.
And older people and younger people, they say, oh, don't mention Hutu, don't mention Tutsi, it's just Rwanda. Mm. I feel you have to be very careful.
Mm. No, it's for me, I think it's not about being careful or being afraid of anything. It's just that really the new generation, who really cares about you are this and or you are that, you know? After all, you know what it did, we saw it, so...
Notice, for you, do you think about tribes anymore?
Mm-mm. No. Because I'm focused on my work, on my job, my music and whatever, so...
So I'm going to come back here in 20 years' time, right? What is Rwanda going to be famous for? What is the Western world going to be talking about?
I think Rwanda, it is now on the next level. We are really focused on what we are doing in every domain.
For me, I think in the next 20 years, this Rwanda will be like an Eden. Do you know Eden?
Eden.
In the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you going to be more famous than you are now?
Of course, yes. It's a matter of time. But in 2 years, my friend.
It's a matter of time.
Just what you do, baby, you're so far, it's insane. Holding on has been so damn hard. You left me with no possibility. If you still out for me, then why is all this longing running through my head? If you still think of laying beside me, then please.
Mike Kayahura is with Rafiki Records, which was founded in Rwanda by music producer Dickon Marshall. And he sees no reason why Rwandan music can't take its place on the world stage.
I think Rwandan music has, I mean, it's had a bit of a troubled history along with the country. And so for people to access it, the platform really hasn't been there. Truthfully, what I believe is that, you know, Rwanda needs its musical ambassadors, people like Sophie, people like Mike, who can represent a genuine way forward, reacting to what's out there and encompassing what's past. So, and these artists can really do that, and I think can compete. They can really get involved on the global music stage.
Don't just listen to the radio from your phone. You also watch TV from your smart device.
Another person contributing to the creative economy here is return refugee, musician, and media mogul Albert Rodetzenberger.
I showed this in Europe, and everyone was like, yeah, so what? And I say, yeah, of course, you guys have such a saturation of all kind of media. You have a TV, you know. But here, the housekeepers or whatever, they have like these little telephones, and they just listen to the radio, right? Now we want them to watch TV from smart devices, you know. And that's my next venture.
Yes, Rwanda can compete on the global stage in any walk of life, but it's still only 20 years since the end of genocide. And as Albert explains, there are daily reminders.
This is the reality, is that some places there where we were, no one had ever digged there ever since 94. So unfortunately, we found bones, a body, no head, empty pocket. And this is the reality of Rwanda. The reality of Rwanda is that we still keep discovering signs of the past.
So how has President Kagame and his government managed to get Rwanda to where it is today, where perpetrators and survivors live side by side?
It's about discipline. It's about discipline, about the fact that you shouldn't be... You should be able to manage yourself and your feelings and everything. You need to be on top of that. Business as always, and I mean, life goes on. Even something sad, something so heavy can happen to you, don't show.
Rwandans don't want to be remembered for 100 days of their history, nor should they be. Their national psyche is loaded with memories most of us would find too hard to bear. Rwanda's hope is for peace. And the role of the artist in achieving that is to refuel the imagination. And one of the people at the helm of Rwanda's musical future, Mighty Popo, is certainly not short of that.
I mean, look up. Check out the stars. Amazing. And I was like, man, you know, this earth, you know, it's, yeah, it's amazing. The crickets, I sit here at night and I listen to them. Mm-hmm. I wrote most of my music on this balcony over there.
So is this home forever?
I mean, what is forever really, you know? Like, right now it's forever for me. And I'll be happy and thankful for another forever.
Rwanda, Rwanda, yeah, yeah. Rwanda, Rwanda, yeah. They said many are called, a few were chosen, but I wish some wasn't chosen for the blood spilling of Rwanda, yeah. They said me shocky, shocking, up in they go, thrown in the fire, but you never get burned, but I wish some didn't get burned in Rwanda, yeah. They said a man is judged according to his works. Yeah. So tell me, Africa, what's your worth? There's no money, no diamonds, no fortunes on this planet that can replace Rwanda. Rwanda, Rwanda. Yeah. Rwanda, Rwanda. These are the cries of the children.